This has been a hard year for all of us. Just look online and you see all the memes about 2020, the jokes that we tell each other as a way of masking how brutal it's been. Many of us feel deeply isolated this year, and especially isolated right now. I mean, the fact that we can't see friends and family in many cases for the holidays, even the fact that we're gathering like this. I mean, I'm glad that you've joined us for this Christmas Eve service, but I hate this. I want to be able to gather in person and see each other face to face. And then there's the uncertainty about the future for some of us, about our jobs and finances. There is the challenge, especially for parents, as they're trying to figure out remote learning for their kids while juggling work and all their other obligations. And then there's all the political animosity and uncertainty that we've been experiencing as a country. This has been a hard year for all of us. And that makes it difficult to feel like celebrating Christmas. Just speaking from the heart, this has been an especially hard year for me. Elizabeth died less than 2 months ago. Still very much in the middle of grief for that. Her birthday was last Saturday, and even Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, I know many of you know how hard the holidays are when you're grieving and full of memories. And then there's single parenting and COVID and school, all that stuff. And on top of that, there's been just all these other, like, the sewer backed up into our basement a few weeks ago, and I haven't even talked to people about this one because I just couldn't handle one more thing on top of all the other stuff, but I had to have a biopsy recently for a lump that a doctor found, which turned out fine, but still there was that anxiety, just thing after thing I feel heavy under. And it is hard for me to think about celebrating. Merry Christmas, right? Let me tell you the story of Jesus. Once there was a teenage girl in a very conservative society, and she got pregnant. She was engaged to be married to this guy, but they weren't married yet, so she faced all of the judgmental comments and sideways glances that any girl in such a society would face. And she told them that an angel had told her that the baby was from God, but of course nobody believed that. They just thought that not only was she immoral, she was also maybe a little bit crazy. She, Mary, and her fiancé, Joseph, do get married in a shotgun wedding, and just before she's about to give birth, the government issues an order that they need to travel 90 miles, in their case, back to Joseph's hometown, probably on foot while she's 9 months pregnant, because the government wanted to count everybody so that they could tax them more. And so they travel to his hometown, and she gives birth to Jesus there. And the birth was an ordinary birth, meaning bloody and with lots of screaming. And probably they were kind of living with Joseph's family for that season of time, but still, they're not by their neighbors, they're not in their house, and then these sketchy strangers show up to celebrate the birth, and they don't have a lot of money, right? Jesus isn't born onto a soft bed or something, he's laid in a manger. And then shortly after his birth, that young family has to become refugees and flee hundreds of miles to Egypt, again, probably on foot, because the local tyrant had decided to commit genocide of babies specifically to kill their kid. Even past his birth, the child Jesus was presumably called bastard more than once by the cruel kids around him. And he grew up with all the usual hardships of his world, which was a mess. I mean, for example, when Jesus was around 6, there was a revolt and civil war in Israel that the government brutally put down. And then there's all the challenges of first century life more broadly, disease without modern medicine and famine, just hard physical work. And there were personal tragedies. While it doesn't give us the details, the New Testament seems to suggest that while he was still young, Joseph, Jesus' father, died. So he was faced with grief and with needing to care for his mother. And then even in his ministry, Jesus wanders without a home, relies on the charity of others. He faces constant slander and attack from the church leaders of his day. His family temporarily disowns him because they're embarrassed by him. On at least one occasion, a mob tries to murder him. And then he is betrayed by one of his closest friends and condemned in a show trial and violently executed. Again, Merry Christmas. Here's what I know. On a day like today, after a year like 2020, that might not be the kind of story that we expect to encounter at a Christmas Eve service. It certainly isn't what, like, Hallmark puts on their Christmas cards. Elizabeth used to get mad at me because we would get cards with nativity scenes on them in the mail, and I would look at the pictures and always say things like, "Where's all the blood?" Or, "She doesn't look like she just had a baby," and she would hit me. But but it doesn't fit with the way that we try to make Christmas sound cheery or beautiful. But that story is the story we need. Here's the truth. Life is hard, and every two-bit God in the world wants to tell you that it doesn't have to be this hard. Life is hard, and every two-bit God in the world wants to give you an escape from your suffering. That's true of all the actual gods. Allah is waiting for you in the afterlife. Buddha wants you to transcend all of your cares and attachments to this world. And it's true of all of the other gods that we worship more commonly in our day. The corporate and political gods that promise us salvation, money and acceptance and security in this world, all of that is just offering to let us escape from the hard parts of life and fix our problems. They promise to deliver us from our pain. And we pay money and time and blood for those promises, even though they never actually work. Jesus is the only God who does not do that, at least not initially. Jesus is the only God who, instead of just saying, "Life doesn't have to be this hard," instead he enters the hardness of this world and he suffers it himself beside you. He experiences it with you. The world's gods, your favorite product or politician, mammon, human praise, whatever the idol is that you look to for salvation, none of them enter into the pain of your life beside you. But Jesus does. Now, yes, there is more to the story, and Jesus does come to work deliverance, and we'll mention that in a minute, but that is the place that we have to start. That when we talk about Jesus, we are talking about a king who chooses to suffer as one of the least of his subjects. When we're talking about Jesus, we're talking about a general who doesn't sit behind the lines, but goes out into the trenches. And not just for an hour or two, not like he's just slumming it with the commoners. He goes and he lives there, lives his whole life there, and he aches and weeps and dies there, just like you and just like me. Listen to how the prophet Isaiah describes Jesus, anticipating his coming. This is a famous passage, but just hear it new tonight under the weight of this year, from Isaiah 53. "Who has believed what he has heard from us? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he grew up before him like a young plant, and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, and no beauty that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And as one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his wounds we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed, and he was afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, and like a sheep that before its shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. And as for his generation, who considered that he was cut off out of the land of the living, stricken for the transgressions of my people? And they made his grave with the wicked, and with a rich man in his death, although he had done no violence, and there was no deceit in his mouth. That man of sorrows, acquainted with grief, is our God. And that is what Christmas is about. Jesus didn't have to, but he chose in love to enter in to our humanity, to enter into the hardness and sadness and brokenness of it. Sure, there are details of our stories that are different from his. He was a Jewish man in first century Galilee, and you have your own specific heartbreaks and histories, but God has suffered in this story, suffered deeply. When God looks at you, it is not the way some rich one percenter looks at a poor person on their big TV. When God looks at you, it is the way people look at each other in support groups or 12-step programs. That look that says, I may not know you, but I get it, man. If God had human eyes you could see, there would be empathy in them and tears. Now, yes, like we said, there is more to the story of Christmas. Jesus does not only suffer as one of us. He also suffers for us and works our salvation. He suffers for the world. And when he rises in triumph from the grave, that's the foretaste of creation's restoration, of bodies given new life, and the world washed clean of sin, and every tear dried, and all things made new. There is profound, unimaginable hope in the Christian story. But some days, especially on hard days like this one, after hard years like this one, we can struggle to feel that hope. And I think that's okay. Because even if your heart isn't there tonight, ready to say and rejoice in all those things, here is what I want you to hear. Even if your heart isn't there, Jesus has been here. He has been here. I remember 10 years ago, celebrating Christmas at the hospital. Rebecca had just been born, our oldest daughter, and she was very premature, and she was still at that stage where we weren't sure if she was even going to make it. She had some bleeding in her brain, and her heart would stop every so often, and we'd have to like shake her back to life. I remember being Christmas time at that hospital, and I was standing in the foyer looking. This was a Catholic children's hospital. They had this nativity scene where baby Jesus was there in the manger, and Joseph and Mary were standing, Joseph's arm around Mary, and they were looking down at him. I remember just standing there for some reason, looking at that for a few minutes. And then I went up to our room, and I looked down at our little girl. And Elizabeth got up and stepped up next to me, and I put my arm around her. And in that moment, I just remember just thinking, this is that. That there we were in all of the beauty, but fear and humanity and mortality that surrounds you in that moment. And there was Jesus in the same place. God was there in that nativity. God is here with us, the same God who has walked the same hard road. After you're like this one, That's really all that my heart can offer this Christmas. God was there, and God is here. The same God who has walked the same hard road. And I pray that you find in that a beauty that can sustain you, even if the rest of the Christian hope feels too hard to believe right now. Our God has come into this world and suffered beside us as one of us. Merry Christmas.